Welcome to the ASA Technology and Telematics Podcast. This is the second episode in the TTF series, A Changing Fleet, covering the auto industry's transition to electric vehicles. Joining us today is Mark Allen. Mark joined Audi of America as the Collision Programs and Workshop Equipment Manager in August of 2011, responsible for the Collision Program, Electric Vehicle Service Strategy, and Workshop Equipment for Audi. Mark's 44-year career in the automotive industry has spanned various areas, including collision, insurance, parts, and equipment repair and sales. Mark holds a BS in Marketing Management from Ramapo College of New Jersey and is a long-term member of the Society of Automotive Engineers, is DIN ISO certified to weld aluminum, and is a board member at Vicar, having served on the executive board for about 5 years. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. I'll let you take it from here.
Thank you for having me today, and I'm so happy to share with everyone some knowledge of things coming up. I am a big fan of recycling and trying to use stuff that we have to be efficient. And I believe that knowledge isn't wasted or has an expiration date, it just changes relevance. So that said, when asked to do the presentation, I thought, great, you know what, I have this presentation and we can go ahead. So you see, the first part, it says, you think you're a rebel living in the moment. And the next slide says, well, the moment is past and is history. Here's the future. I thought that was, you know, pretty clever of me. But then I realized that we launched the Audi e-tron and e-tron Sportback in 2018. It was a grand event that we had, a world launch in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I realized, oh my gosh, I'm not a rebel either. I have got the past here, but I'm happy to share this with you. But it does make a great point. The fact of the matter is the automotive industry is changing at such a fast pace. Our knowledge is not, again, stale or have an expiration, but needs to be constantly updated on a almost day-to-day basis. So here we had at the gala event our beautiful e-tron that's now 4 years old in model years, and we're starting to think about doing product update and bringing it to its next phase of life as we go into our model lines. So we had presentation all over the San Francisco Bay Area for not only the dealers and management of Audi in the US, but members from all over the globe came to this event. But to get to that launch, there's a lot of work that goes into it. We have effectively a lot of work. People are used to seeing the glamorous shots on TV of a car and so forth, but never really consider all of the design and work that goes into it, the logistics of having the right parts available when the car is ready so it's supported. To that point, from the collision side and from the marketing side and so forth, we do a lot of work to make sure that the vehicles are capable of meeting the customer's needs and protection. So these cars that I'm showing to you right now are vehicles that were first tested and crashed at NCAP in preparation of going to IIHS. And when they went to IIHS, they performed as expected. And we are very happy and proud to tell you that, yes, it has received the highest accreditation from IIHS in the entire line. So this is a great thing. What I'm also showing you are vehicles that can still move on their own. They did what they were supposed to do in achieving that rating, but fact of the matter is we were able to drive these off of the transporters. The red one is on a GoJack because it had a dead 12-volt battery in it, and we'll talk about 12 volts in a little bit. Something to also consider before I move off of this is with the hood open, there are high voltage components that you need to be aware of. And when you're working on the car, whether it's collision or mechanical, you need to take the appropriate precautions for personal protection. And that includes everyone that comes in contact with the vehicle. One last from the body and collision side. You can see that the structure here is very robust. The red frame rails and cross rails in the car, longitudinal members, are all ultra advanced high strength steel. So super rigid, super protective of the occupants. But then the battery itself is very robust with a very high count extruded aluminum outer rail system. I believe there's 11 to 14 individual cells in that extrusion. So super strong, but not considered part of the structure of the vehicle. In other words, if you remove the battery, we would not tell you you needed to brace the body because it would become flimsy. The body is very robust on it. So here it is at IIHS achieving its great crash test rating, and we move on from there. So let's talk about what it looks like from the mechanical and the electrical side. Here again is at that launch that we had in San Francisco, and it's a great mock-up because you can see it's a two-motor system, one in front, one in rear, with their transmissions attached. And the basically what you would expect on any other vehicle in an ICE vehicle of suspension, air suspension, and control arms and shafts as well, propeller shafts. You'll notice the battery in the center, very large. So keep this in mind, and we'll talk about this going forward. This is about the size of a queen-size mattress and weighs almost 1,700 pounds with no fluids in it. You'll see the command module up at the front, and that would be where on an ICE car we would say that's the bell housing area of the transmission tunnel. So if there are challenges that need to be repaired in the command module, you can do that without going into the battery, but you'll need to take the appropriate precautions for personal protection going forward. So here's what the battery looks like as it is apart. It, as I said, 1,675 pounds, so almost 1,700 pounds. There are 36 modules in there. Each module has 11 individual cells at 3.6 to 3.8 volts. So there's 396 individual cells of lithium ion packet, bringing you up to close to 400 volts DC. But something else to remember as we go forward in here, you have both forms of electricity present. So there's DC and AC. So when dealing with this, you need to have equipment that is capable of handling that very high voltage and amperage in both types of electricity. So in general, there are four different classifications that are surrounding people that come into contact with electric vehicle. One is high voltage aware, and that means that everyone in your shop, from the receptionist to the technician that's going to go into the battery or into one of the high voltage systems, needs to take this training. It makes them aware of what they're dealing with and the precautions that they should take. In the world of Audi, we had made everyone in our dealerships regardless, take this training in the Audi Collision Program. Everyone in the Audi Collision Program has to take this, whether it's an independent shop or a dealer-owned shop. The next level of training is the high voltage technician. And a high voltage technician is yet a higher classification where they can plug in and run diagnostics on the high voltage system and system diagnostics with the 12 volt system. And they have the training to know how to de-energize the battery through guided fault finding and do it in an appropriate manner. They can take the battery out of the car, but that's where it stops. The next level is high voltage expert. And the high voltage expert is the guy that gets to, or lady that gets to wear the really cool and comfortable personal protection gear and has the training to go in, diagnose and change components within the high voltage system. I keep stressing high voltage system because we lock on the battery part, but there are other many, many other high voltage components in the car. There is one higher level than this, and I don't have it on the slide, and that's PKE. And PKE is the high voltage technician that he can go in to the battery or high voltage system and do theoretical diagnosis and go around the whole training. That training for that person is a month long, and it's very intensive. So now that we've talked about training, let's talk about some of the whys and some of the things that you really need to consider. I do want to stress that if we were going to release a gasoline car as they did in the late 1800s, early 1900s to the market, in 2022, the legislation, the laws, and the precautions taken would be as robust as we are talking about now. Think about it, all the stories that you've heard over the years about technicians that have gotten burned from the drop light falling in the gasoline and all those other stories that we're familiar with. So I'm stressing safety, yes, a little bit to put concern into your mindset, and that's for a very good reason. But on the other hand, it's also something that, you know what, we in these times need to be aware of. If you look at the human body, consisting mostly of water and then a handful of different elements that make up the body, it is a great conductor of electricity. And I really suggest if you are thinking of going down the path of servicing electric vehicles, go back over your basic electric theory and understand what you're dealing with. It's always good to refresh that. Here you can see the resistance values of the human body are very low, and the blood, especially having consistency of iron, is really great at being an electrical conductor. So need to keep this in mind. The effect of the electricity on the human body varies and depends on the points of contact. And you can see in the picture here the different levels of resistance. If you look at the main body, it is very, very low. Bit of an eye chart, and I hate that expression, especially when it's used in a PowerPoint that has little tiny font. But some things to consider. Again, we have both AC and DC present. So as kids, we used to take that 9-volt radio battery and touch it to our tongue and kind of get that little shock and tingle. And it was, you know, yeah, the battery's good and it's cute. Well, that's 9 volts at very low amperage, and that's in a safe zone. We can pull it away. But when you start to look at voltage as it grows, really the limit is somewhere around 50 volts for safety, and that's AC and DC. Now, it's how long you hold on to it. If I hold on to 50 volts for a very long time, I could potentially have a lot of damage if I don't let go. But thank God the reflex action says let go. If I jump just 50 more volts, I double that voltage, and I hold on to it for a longer amount of time, we can be in a death zone. And it could become a point where, oh my gosh, we're going to have some major problems. So if you look back to the left, hey, severity, that's that 9-volt battery that we touched our tongue, ha, no big deal. Severity two, if you look at that 50 volts, hey, maybe I got zapped by a 12-volt battery. I feel some pain. I can still let go and maybe a little bit of a burn, but there's no long-lasting effects. Severity three is where we really start to see problems, and it depends on the health of the person. So it could cause muscle spasms, breathing difficulties, heart arrhythmia. This is where it really starts to get real, and why we're having these conversations about safety and protection, because it can become lethal, and it's a very, very slim area. Going to severity four range, where now we can go into cardiac arrest, defibrillation, and respiratory problems. So things to think about. Again, a incandescent bulb being next to a fuel tank, kind of put it in the same context. High voltage safety systems. Well, let's talk about how we de-energize the vehicle. There are three ways, and we'll go over how you can do that. And there's a couple things that we need to understand. We de-energize a vehicle, and there's a few different ways. If the vehicle is in an accident, we have some fuses and so forth that we can do. But once you de-energize the system, you need to make sure that it doesn't get to restart. Someone can just walk over and close the connector, and all of a sudden we're back to high voltage. Very, very dangerous scenario. High voltage safety systems. Well, let's talk about the de-energization. We can do this in a few different ways. There is a mechanics lock that's on the cowl under the hood. And it's a little green lock that effectively looks like a two-bladed fuse, though it's not a fuse. And it just flip the tab, pull it up, and it opens up the connector for the low-tension internal ground. So then it starts to release the energy from the capacitors in that control module that you saw on the top of the battery. There's also a fuse in the back of the car for in case of an accident, where first responders can pull the fuse, and it will effectively do the same thing as that mechanics lock. In the mechanics lock, there's a loop where you can put a padlock through to prevent people from reconnecting and causing the system to go back up to energy. There's a manual de-energization that we can use with an adapter, and we want to check the voltage where. Remember, I was talking about other high voltage systems. We can check it at the AC compressor, which runs off the high voltage battery, and we want to make sure that there's no power there. The other way is we hook up to our diagnostic, and it depends on whether the battery is in the car or out of the car. There are two different scenarios, but there is a dongle that can go into the vehicle system, and we follow guided fault finding to de-energize the high voltage battery. I also have to caution you that even you, in a 12 volt battery, you need to follow guided fault finding. If you don't, you're going to cause a whole bunch of codes to pop that will need to be cleared before you can bring the system back up and running. So here's the high voltage lockout that I was telling you about in the engine bay on the left. And if you look on the right, here's a fuse panel, and it varies by vehicle and manufacturer. In the e-tron, it's in the back of the vehicle on the left-hand side in the luggage compartment area. You just pull that big tab out. Now, something to consider. This is not like pulling a plug out of the wall and declaring that the system that you're working on is void of any voltage. Here is where you have to take additional caution. What you're doing is opening capacitors instead of unplugging from the wall, and those capacitors need time to bleed down the system voltage to get the safety. So if you do that, you just don't unplug and then start taking high voltage connectors. We produce first responder information that's always available so that the first responders can see where that is. And if you look at the lower right corner, you can see the luggage compartment and where that fuse box is. Back to the high voltage components that you need to take notice of and be vigilant in what you do around it. On the left is the high voltage converter that takes the DC in the battery and converts it to AC to run things like your AC compressor, your heater, and your system cooling pumps. So these are things that you really need to take into consideration when you're working on the car. Again, that high voltage technician, high voltage expert are the ones that should be involved with this. If there's any involvement in going into the system, it has to be the high voltage expert. Another quick view of the battery. Something I failed to note is that the battery has coolant, and that's 5.5 gallons of coolant. So it's quite a bit to consider when you're going in there. There are other high voltage systems to be concerned with. We talked a lot about the large battery, but in mild hybrid, you have 12 volt and 48 volt lithium ion batteries that you need to be concerned with. And we'll talk about those in a little bit. View of the connectors that are used in the systems in the world of Audi and Volkswagen. You have to work very hard to cause a spark or an arc. But again, humans do some silly things sometimes, so they really do stress wearing gloves, having the right PPE on when you're working on the vehicle. All right, so we've talked a lot about high voltage and what you need to consider as you're going to work on the vehicle. here is the style portion of our show. You, if you're a high voltage expert, get to wear these spiffy high fluting outfits that are an absolute must for your protection if you're going into a high voltage system. 20 cal suit. So really the gentleman in the front that is the tan colored suit on is what you need. Helmet and flash protection. This is to prevent, effectively like welder's arc to your eyes and protect your face from any flash that comes to it. There are two different systems. One is a three-glove system, which we originally had. Again, this presentation being a little bit older, some of the content in here. There's a cotton inner glove, a silicone glove that is really your shock protection, and a leather outer glove that does not give shock protection, but it protects the silicone glove that's in there. Note on the silicone gloves, every time you take them off, you need to check them. Every time you put them on, you need to check them. Even just a small nick in that glove can cause an opening where voltage can come and find your body. So the easiest way to do it is blow it up like a balloon and see if it holds air. If it holds air, you're good. If it does not, throw them away. You need to get another glove. Costs of these personal items, the uniforms, the special boots, the gloves, the helmet, is probably in the $300 to $400 range. I would highly suggest if you're going to be a shop that works on a lot of high voltage systems, have several pairs of gloves, at least two uniforms for the technician that's going to wear that. Reason I say is it's very hot, and if you're in a climate where it's warm, you're going to sweat a lot. When that uniform and protection gets wet, it becomes conductive. So you need to change out your clothes and stay dry, not just for comfort, but conductivity. Special tools. So I'm not just going to run over to the old Snap-on draw and pull out my socket sets and hold bare steel as I'm working in a high voltage system. You'll see here that these are all encased in silicone insulation. So when they connect, every connection is protected from arc. These things are very important when you're working on a high voltage system. There are a lot of needle nose and specialized pliers, and having worked on these, I'm going to tell you, you're going to very much appreciate having those needle nose pliers, wearing those large gloves. Kind of think of it akin to changing valve springs in the car and trying to keep the valve keepers from going down an oil galley and getting wedged where you can't get it out, right? And then you wind up pulling the engine apart and trying to pull those keepers out. Kind of the same thing, very tight quarters and a battery, small screws, big fingers. It does get a little bit challenging, but the proper tools help you work in that environment and make it a lot easier for you to work there. All right, a little bit more to know about high voltage. So we are so used to 12 volts where we do a positive to the system and a negative to the ground on the chassis. Well, that's not what we have with a high voltage battery. We do have that with the 12 volt battery that runs the systems, but we don't have that with a high voltage battery. It is internally grounded, and there are two different grounds. There's that low tension ground that I was telling you about earlier, that when you pull that mechanics lock, and then there are internal grounds that do not go out to the chassis. So if you see one fault in the dashboard, as one or two of those NCAP cars that we crash tested had, the car will drive and move. There is no shock concern to the body. The car will move, and you can go ahead and do that, do what you need to do with the car. If you get the second fault, this is where there is a ground and a potential, and I will stress a potential, not an absolute, that there can be voltage to the body. The car will not move, and there is no way of moving it. You'll need to put it on GoJacks and get the vehicle on the system. The potential is extremely low. However, we need to call it out. Again, you want to make sure that you're protecting yourself and the ones around you. So, one of the things that drives me crazy personally is the claim that there are no instructions or repair procedures to work on these new vehicles. And that can't be further from the truth. There is great information available. Just have to have the courage to go and look for it. And I will share where you can do that. Things that you need to consider, and I'm going to go back a slide or two so that you can see. If you notice the group, we're standing around the battery, and that's me in the back with my shade down. I have a face for radio and not for print or TV. You'll notice that we have the area cordoned off. So there are caution tapes that are around. And when working in a high voltage system, if a component is open, then these placards and roping must be around. And anyone who is not a high voltage expert needs to be out of the area. Placards need to be put on the car to let you know that the vehicle is been de-energized, and that's that little switch symbol that you see in the red and white, and it says okay, it's open, there's no high voltage present. But on the battery, and if it's out of the vehicle, you need to take and put the placard that says, hey everyone, there is high voltage present, stay out of the area, stay away from that cordoned off area that you have. And the other placard, if there's a case of leakage, say of coolant or whatever, you need to know. This is all available through pretty much every manufacturer, and we call out in our repair procedures, when does the vehicle need to have the high voltage battery de-energized, and what you need to do when you're working on it. So we'll go into that a little bit further. When you're planning your shop out, and this is a big thing that in that preparedness that I was saying about bringing a vehicle to market, we have done a lot of work with our architecture people for the dealers to lay out, hey, what's the best case scenario for your shop? Let's face it, not every shop is a perfect square, or perfect rectangle, and has access. You notice that we're saying you need a 16-foot area to the front, to the rear, and to both sides where you are cordoning off and keeping people away, the general population walking back and forth around the car. It also offers you an area to drop the battery out of the car and an area to work in without interruption. And some of the feedback that we've received from our high voltage technicians is they really would like an area where they can kind of be alone and concentrate when and where they're working. So again, going back to the ICE engine car, hey, if I'm setting up tolerances on bearings and ring gaps and so forth, I kind of want to be left alone at that point so I can ensure the accuracy. Same thing here in the electric realm. Something else you need to consider is the lifts. To get that mattress-sized battery out of the car, you need a lift that is minimum 67 inches between the two vertical posts. Now, not the arms, the posts, because you need to be able to drop that battery down on a hydraulic table, and the floor in that area needs to be flat. So when I have that 1700 pound battery on the cart, I can roll it around and move it with ease. I don't want to have to go up and over that lift hump that many places have. Placement of the lift is something else you want to consider. If for chance you wind up with a battery that has some thermal instability, you want to have an area that's close to the door where you can move the battery outside. And outside of the building, you need an area that's 16 by 16 by 16 by 16 where you can put the battery out. It's not going to be by any buildings or other vehicles, and you can quarantine it. And at that point, you need to let the fire department know that, hey, just putting you on notice, we have a battery with a thermal event, and we will be checking it over time, but we may be calling you, and you're going to put it outside. Big challenge for metro areas, not only for the independent repairers, certainly for our dealers as well. Your lift capacity needs to be 8,000 pounds or better. That's the downside of EVs. Vehicle weight goes up despite us taking weight out of the bodies and making them stronger and lighter. Batteries are pretty heavy. So to give you a real-life working scenario, this is in our training center in Ashburn, Virginia, where I worked with one of our high-voltage trainers at the time, and we were preparing for class. So he had already done the high-voltage technician part of it, ensuring that the vehicle was de-energized. He had drained the 5.5 gallons of coolant out of the vehicle, and we were ready to remove the 37 fasteners. They're one-time use fastener in this vehicle, so you're aware. And really, the time to take the battery out of the vehicle mechanically was maybe 15 minutes. We worked with two nut drivers in unison, and we got down both sides. We had the table up under the battery so it was ready to receive it, and we were ready to go. So the time to physically remove the battery, low. The time to de-energize, do the guided fault finding, and checking the grounding of the system and continuity of the system, that took the most time there. So things to consider: putting it back in, getting that 5.5 gallons of coolant back in, and bleeding the air out of the system can take some time. You'll see in the center photo, there's that high voltage controller that I was talking about. And that's where those capacitors, there's two, are housed. And again, they take time to de-energize and be safe. Some of the other things to consider is if you wind up putting a new battery in and it's the size of a mattress, you're not going to get guys from around the shop and say, hey, come on, let's lift this up out of this big box. You'll need to use a lifting sling, as you see on the left side of the presentation, that bolts to the battery. And you then need a forklift to pull it out. Trying to do it with a heavy-duty engine hoist is very, very difficult, and we really don't suggest it. You can see the dimensions. It's almost 69 inches by 92 inches by 28 inches high. Packaging is very important. If you're just replacing a battery and there are no issues, you would take the battery out and put it back in, put the bad one back in the shipping crate, and then you would return it. The other scenarios where you may have a module that's gone bad or whatever, there are other packaging to consider. Again, forklift, and on our newest vehicle, the e-tron GT and GTRS, those require a forklift with a 6-foot fork capacity, or at least have a fork extension that can be 6 foot to pull it up and out. Here's a case where we're talking about a module and it's a much smaller box. The other thing to consider for your shop is having someone well trained in OSHA and packaging for that, because it's going to be a requirement as you go forward. And the very large container on the right side is a container that mattress-sized battery would go in if it were thermally unstable and needed to go off to recycling immediately. So there's a lot to consider in this. The packaging is key. What I suggest is, don't be a hero. Don't claim to have genius. Reach out. There are a lot of recyclers, and that part of this business has really exploded with good opportunity and good help in the past 4 years. And they can help you get stuff removed from your premises safely and shipped to where it needs to go. Okay, we do have some additional things to consider, and it's not necessarily from a mechanical standpoint, but in the body shop, again, we post this in our repair procedures. Hey, if you have to dry paint and it's going to take a long time, there are criteria for how long the battery can sit in extreme heat for time. So you can see we're saying not more than 90 minutes at more than 150 degrees. So things to consider. Again, placards, all very important. Let's talk about charging for a minute. There are different levels of charging. 110 volts comes with the car. That's a nice to do if you're traveling and you're going to spend overnight. The fact of the matter is, 110 volts takes a very long time to charge up a 95 kilowatt battery. Typically, people use the 220, and that takes about 8 hours to bring the battery up to a near full capacity. But as a shop owner, you're going to really need to look at your business. And again, how much of these vehicles are you looking to do? But you probably want to have a minimum of a level 2, most likely a level 3. What does that mean? Well, you're going to need to get together with an electrician and your power company to look and see what you have in your shop and what it's going to cost to raise that to have those level 3 chargers. Just another little plug, lightning in a bottle, and we talk about that. When you get into higher, faster charging, the plugs become very critical. And as you see where that fender is, if you're changing things around that is a high voltage component. So know what you're dealing with, and that's why we have those levels of training and awareness. But part of getting that fast charging at 150 kilowatts or 100 kilowatts is going to be cooling those plugs. And that's something that else that comes into play here. So I said earlier that personal pet peeve of mine is that there are tones out in the industry that we can't get repair procedures. We don't have repair information. Well, I'm going to tell you flat out, you're wrong. This is OEM One Stop. It's run by a group that is a unification, if you will, or a bunch of the manufacturers, all of which you see here, that sit in the collision side. And we also have a mechanical parts side as well. And we have an antitrust attorney that sits on any of our meetings and conversations. But what we've done is created a website available to you where you can go in and say, hey, I'm working on an Audi today and I need to get the repair procedures, and I can click on the link and it'll bring you to our Irwin repair procedures for Audi, Volkswagen, and then you can get into Bentley and Lamborghini is not as prevalent, but you can get in there. I'm working on a Hyundai today or a Subaru. It's all there and for your use, both body as well as electrical and mechanical. Wiring diagrams are there. Tools and equipment in at least the Audi world are listed. I can't talk for the other manufacturers, but I know many of them call out what you need. So caveat to this, information is available. Some of it is free. Most of it does have a charge, and it can be by day, week, month, year. Depends on what you do in your shop and the prevalence of vehicles, of whether you want to buy a year's subscription or if you're just doing a day, it's available to you. So please keep that in mind. I put the website on there. It's very simple. www.OEM1stop.com, and you can get all the answers that are available to myself, for example. Another great investment for you in learning about this is ICAR. Now, I know we're talking to a mixed group and highly support this. ICAR is run from the collision side, but seeing a need and called out by a lot of manufacturers in the industry for both sides, mechanical and electrical, ICAR has some generic yet very good electrical courses that you can take online, and they do have instructor-led as well. So if you have interest in learning and going on, I've taken this from the ICAR website. Full disclosure, I am a board member and have helped with development of this this course and these course offerings. But it is available to you, and I highly suggest that it's very friendly, and it's a great way to get into that realm of EV. Last notes, 12 volts. 12 volts are still super important. You'll notice that we have the 12 volts. It's about in the middle of the cowl, kind of sits up above that bell housing area in the old transmission tunnel, as we used to call it. But think about this. This is what 12 volts runs in this e-tron. Looks like a human nervous system if you think about it, and all the organs that supplies. So the complexity is there. It's understandable by those repair procedures that I noted. So please, if you have questions, reach out. Know that there are resources available to you. This is another great thing that I thought, wow, this is super cutting. Well, I'm not a rebel. This is actually our e-tron GT and GTRS. that was the concept, and you see the date on it, 11 of 18. It's in the market. It's here. Stunning vehicle. Again, a little bit different layout, but you can see how it sets in the chassis, where the mechanicals are, and everything else. With that, all this confusion, you have to ask yourself, do I feel lucky, or am I going to protect myself, educate myself, and be ready for the future? I thank you for listening. I hope that we can help you, and this brings you to the next level of your journey in shop ownership and ability to service our customers.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mark, and thanks for taking the time out of your day to teach us all of this very important information. As we all know, there's lots of electric vehicles coming to market now in the shops, and it's super important that all of our repairers be safe and prepared. So thank you. And with that, that's the Technology and Telematics Forum podcast.
Thank you, and I wish everyone a great week.